Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Lori McGee, and it is my privilege to serve as worship associate for today's service. I'm joined today by Tom Beck, who is leading our worship this morning. We are delighted to welcome you to this religious community. I would like to extend a special welcome to those of you who are with us for the first time today. We are glad to have guests at our services. We hope you will stay after the service to join us downstairs in Fessenden Hall for a time of coffee and conversation. Or if you like, you may have a cup of tea in the Founders Lounge and browse through the selections in our church library. If you find you would like more information about the life and work of this community, we invite you to complete our guest cards, which you will find in the racks in the pews in front of you. You may place your completed cards in the offering basket later in the service or hand them to a representative of our membership committee who will be glad to meet you at the visitor's table in the Founders Lounge after our service. Ours is a church that strives to practice the fragile art of hospitality. In that spirit, I invite you to take a moment now to turn and greet your neighbor. This Wednesday, Christy Anderson will lead the Vespers service entitled Enlighten Up. Everyone is invited to this service on laughter at 7 o'clock, followed by hospitality at 7:30. Also, the Living by Heart class is looking for additional members. The class is held on the third Thursday of every month from 7 to 9 p.m. The next class is this coming Thursday. If you would like more information, please see me after the service. And our church is holding its annual Thanksgiving dinner on Thanksgiving Day at 3 o'clock in Fessenden Hall. There is information in your thread and a sign-up sheet in Fessenden. Next week, you are again invited to join us for worship at 9:30 and 11:15. The Reverend Melissa Carvel-Zemer will be leading the service, accompanied by Worship Associate Elaine Bowen and our Director of Religious Education, Karen Lapidus. The title of the service is A Feast of Blessings. At the end of today's service, Tom and I would be glad to greet you at the rear of the sanctuary, and once again, I bid you welcome. The glories of peace. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. But they shall all sit under their own vines and fig trees, and no one shall make them afraid.
Good morning. Several years ago, I witnessed my middle son, Michael, take the oath to become an officer in the United States Army. This is what he said. I, Michael Beck, having been appointed an officer in the Army of the United States, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign or domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely, without any mental reservations or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office upon which I am about to enter. So help me God. It's an oath that, with some variation in wording, has been administered to millions of Americans who served in the various branches of our military. During this sermon titled Proud Army Dad, I want to explore some of the issues associated with the U.S. military and military families. My message today is from the perspective of a family member of a military service person who is on active duty in a war zone.
Please join me now in the spirit of prayer with these words adapted from a prayer written by Carrie Mueller. Spirit of life, we are joined today in a moment of gratitude for a perfect fall day, for a last blast of sunshine in a sapphire sky before the rain and snow, for gold and crimson leaves before we are mired in piles of slush. For the moment of peace and contemplation in which to appreciate this rare beauty. This moment of perfection sharpens our love for an imperfect world. We are reminded of the many people in the world who are burdened by hunger and pain, by sorrow and anxiety, by violence and loss. We pause this morning to share our concern and care for all people who find themselves suffering. May they find comfort and peace, and may their burdens be lifted from them. May we find it in ourselves today to work toward a better world. We are energized by the beauty of the day. May we make use of that energy to take part in the lifting of burdens. May our gratitude find expression in the care of others, both near and far. May we find ways to bless the world. Amen.
I work at the University of Akron, where I'm a teacher and an administrator. 10 years ago, my middle son, Michael, called me to invite me to lunch and suggested that since he was a poor college student, I would be wise to bring along some money to pay the bill. We gossiped about the fraternity to which my sons and I belong. And then Michael said, "Dad, I have something to tell you. I've decided to join the Army. I'm going to finish ROTC and then make the Army my career." At first, I wasn't sure I heard him correctly. Wasn't he talking about the National Guard to which he already belonged? No, you heard me correctly. I'm going to join the Army, the United States Army. I said, "You mean the big army?" He laughed and he answered, "Yes, the one you see on TV." I hardly knew where to begin. I certainly wasn't happy with his decision. I always envisioned Michael working in some executive position in business or industry. "Michael," I said, "have you thought this through clearly? What if we go to war?" He answered, "Well, if we go to war, I guess I'd have to go along and do my job. But it could be dangerous," I said. "Dad," he replied, "it can be dangerous just crossing the street." "It's not the same thing," I insisted. "I know," he said, "but it's my decision to make, and that's what I've decided to do." I stared at Michael. This grown-up man making grown-up decisions. And I wondered, what happened to my baby? I thought, "You can't make a decision like this. You're still a kid." A funny, silly, prank-playing kid. I remembered when he was born. He didn't cry. I asked the doctor if he was okay, because weren't newly born babies supposed to be crying? The doctor said he was breathing just fine without crying. And the nurse said, "Doctor, look at this baby's face. I do believe he's smiling." He was. Michael was born laughing, and he hasn't stopped since. He was a large baby, weighing about 10 pounds, and he had a full head of this long, thick, wild black hair. A few days later, I was standing at the window looking at the babies all lined up in their bassinets, and Mike was definitely the biggest one of the bunch. A man standing next to me exclaimed, "Wow, look at the size of that kid in the middle. It looks like they forgot to take him home. Look at that crazy hair. The kid looks like a baby gorilla. I'd like to meet his father. I bet he looks just like a big hairy gorilla, too. I shifted my eyes to the man, and he nudged me with his arm. Hey, buddy, any of these kids yours? Yes, I answered. Yeah, which one? I replied, you see that hairy little gorilla right there in the middle? And I looked at Mike. I swear he was laughing, as if to say, hey, good one, Dad. Awesome setup. Mike recognized the ridiculousness of the world. He was the class clown, and if there was a prank to be played or a stand-up routine to be delivered, it came from Mike. And he was good at it, too. In college, Michael had decided to join the National Guard. So one night, he was drinking with his fraternity brothers, and as the night wore on, he waited for his chance to suggest that all of them should go down the next morning and join the National Guard. Now, of course, they were all drunk enough that they all started talking a big story about how brave they are and how they'd sign up if Michael signed up. Mike made them swear that they wouldn't back out. So the next morning, Michael gathered up his hungover brethren, and he drove them to the National Guard office, and of course, they all declined the offer to join the Guard. All of them, except Michael. And upon hearing this story, I asked Michael why he did it that way. If you're going to join anyway, why drag all those guys along? Dad, he said, I knew they'd chicken out. Doing it this way makes me a legend. He was right. I've often heard that story retold by his fraternity brothers, and they always end the story with, and we all backed out of the deal, but not Beck. He signed up. It was so Mike, they'd say. As I sat there in the restaurant looking at this grown man whose eyes shined with resolution, I said, Michael, I really don't approve of this decision at all. His face turned serious and he said, Dad, I never told you that you couldn't become a broadcaster or a teacher, did I? Then he leaned forward and he pressed his hands together and he added, it's not your place to approve or disapprove of my decision. It's your job to learn how to live with it. Learn how to live with it. Now that's a challenge. As we sat there 10 years ago talking about his future, I didn't know then what I know now. I didn't know that he would be stationed in South Korea for a year. We forget that Korea is still an active war zone. Michael was stationed in the northernmost post along the demilitarized zone. I asked what would happen to him if the shooting war fired up in Korea, and he said, well, Dad, I'm basically a speed bump. If the North Koreans come over the border, my job will be to hold them back for a few minutes so the word can reach south that the war has begun. Now, we calculate that we'd last about 12 minutes, just about long enough to get the word down to HQ. Every time, a news story would come on the air wherein North Korean dear leader Kim Jong-il did something else nutty, I would take it personally, and then my blood pressure would shoot up. Learn to live with it. Mike told me that when he was in Iraq, one of his duties was to deal with soldiers in his unit who were killed by explosive devices, roadside bombs. He said that following an attack, it would be necessary to enter the armored vehicle and remove the body parts of the dead soldiers. He said he watched the faces of the 18 and 19-year-olds who were assigned to the task, and he said their faces appeared to age 30 years in just a matter of minutes. Mike kept from me the number of times he was under fire, but I found out from his brothers. How can a father learn to live with that? Mike is now stationed in Afghanistan. I asked him if he thought his job was a safe one. "Oh, you don't have to worry, Dad," he said. "I have lots of bodyguards." Okay, see, the fact that you need bodyguards doesn't make me feel a whole lot more confident. No, I didn't know at the time, 10 years ago, that Mike would be stationed in Korea or Iraq or Afghanistan. 9/11 hadn't happened yet. And aside from general saber rattling at the end of the last century, it looked like we would remain at peace. And then one day in September, everything changed. How does a person live to learn with the fear that a loved one in uniform can be hurt or killed? It's a fear that never goes away, never takes a vacation, never has the decency to allow you to sleep in peace. I can be walking along on campus and then suddenly a feeling strikes me. And I shudder and I think, "Oh my God, what if something happens to him today?" I'm the general manager of an independent public radio station owned by the University of Akron, WZIP-FM. One day I was at my desk and our secretary came into my office and said, "Tom, there are two Army officers at the door, and they ask for you." I said, "Did they ask for me by name, or did they just ask for the general manager?" She said, "They ask for you by name." A chill ran through my body as I made my way to the door and stepped into the hallway, where two Army officers in full uniform were waiting for me. "Are you Thomas Beck?" one asked. "Yes." "Well, sir, we need to talk to you about something important." They were grim-faced. I asked, "Do you need to talk to me about a private matter? Or is this business?" The two officers looked at each other and then said, "No, sir, it's a private matter." I think my heart stopped beating. I could hardly breathe. I froze in place. I could barely get the words out. "Okay, what is it you have to tell me?" "Sir," one of them answered, "we need to talk to you about a private matter. Why it matters that every young man and woman listening to your radio station should make the private decision to join the U.S. Army." My eyes opened up to the size of saucers. They were Army recruiters, probably here to ask me to broadcast their recruiting announcements. I started to swear using language I cannot repeat here. One officer looked at the other and said, "We usually don't get this kind of reception." I said, "You scared me out of my wits. My son is in the Army and he's stationed in Iraq in an active war zone." "Oh," the officer said. And then comprehending my meaning, he said, "Oh, I don't think that's how they tell you." And the other one said, "You know, I really don't know how they tell you." I was so mad. I finished my business with them. I walked back into the radio station. I was actually in shock. I held my hands up and I said, "Terry, look at this. I'm shaking and I can't stop." I don't understand how my grandmother and grandfather Beck did it. There were 10 Beck children. My father and his 9 brothers and sisters, my uncles and aunts. During World War II, all 5 of the Beck boys, my father and his 4 brothers, served on active duty in war zones in the Air Force, Marines, and Army. 3 were in the Pacific and 2 in Europe. My grandmother heard the same radio news reports that everybody else did, but to her, I'm sure each news report of a battle won or lost must have been a private message perhaps foreshadowing a knock at the door or a visit from an army officer accompanied by the parish priest. I don't know how she did it. There are times when I turn off the TV or walk away from an NPR news report. Sometimes I just can't take it. Well, I didn't know all of this, of course, 10 years ago when this smiling, all-grown-up man was telling me all about his plans to make a career in the military. I told him I'd stand behind his decision, but I didn't have to like it. And he had that devilish twinkle in his eye, and he said, "You know, you're the one who gave me this idea in the first place." "Me? When did I ever tell you to join the army?" I questioned. And he smiled. He said, "All the time we were kids, you said over and over again that the purpose behind life is to be happy and to have an adventure every so often. Joining the army is going to make me happy, and it's certainly going to be an adventure." He's right. That's what I told them. But I never thought anybody was actually paying attention. If you love a person who is in the military, you cannot separate yourself from pride and fear. I'm proud of Mike and his service to our country. At the same time, I'm afraid every day that he might be injured or worse. His words come back to me often, "Dad, it's not your place to approve or disapprove of my decision to join the army. It's your job to learn how to live with it." I am a proud Army dad, and after 10 years, I'm getting better at learning how to live with Mike's decision to join the army. But here's a little secret that I'll share just between me and you. I may learn how to live with it, but I'll never get used to it. I am a proud Army dad, but I am a proud Army dad with mixed emotions. One of my emotions regarding the military is anger, but not anger directed at the military. I am angry at our politicians who throughout American history have misused our military, and I'm angry at the people of the United States for allowing the abuse of the military to occur. The U.S. military is a great national resource. Our military is well-trained, educated, skilled, and disciplined. Unlike in other countries, the United States military does not try to take over our government or depose our elected leaders. Throughout our history, and especially during the past 8 years, we have abused our military, and this makes me angry. My emotions run to tension when I hear talk show hosts discuss the military. They evoke an image of the military as if it were one cohesive living political organism. We need to recognize that the military includes 2 million individual human beings, each with unique needs and goals and motivation. Mark Twain's short story titled The War Prayer reminds us that there are real consequences for real people when we make the decision to go to war. My emotions include sadness when I think of how our political policies have affected our military personnel and their families. The medical care we offer injured servicemen and women is inadequate, and our rehabilitation facilities cannot meet the need. Our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines pay a high price for duty. In my opinion, our veterans deserve better. I am frustrated at how people react when they learn that my son is serving in the military. I am friends with a politically conservative person. He actually said to me, God bless Mike and the wonderful work he's doing for the country. He's involved in a great crusade ordained by God, and this victory will be won when we Christianize all these people. Now, what can you say to that? But my liberal friends can be just as uncaring. I told a liberal friend about Mike's service in Afghanistan, and she said, "Not good, not good, not good." I said, "Mike's trying to do a competent job under difficult circumstances." "No," she insisted. And as she walked away, she kept saying, "Not good, not good." Most people want to lecture me about the wars as if my son started the fighting. And for others, their reaction of sympathy is really quite unsettling. Upon learning that Mike is in Afghanistan, they make a real sad face and say, "Oh." It's the exact same reaction that a person gives upon learning that someone has been diagnosed with cancer or has been placed in hospice. A friend said to me, "Well, to tell you the truth, I don't know what you say when somebody says they have a child in active duty. What are you supposed to say?" There are three things that you can say if you truly want to be helpful. Firstly, say, "How is your son or daughter doing?" Secondly, "How are you doing?" And thirdly, "If there's anything I can do to be helpful, let me know." These are caring responses devoid of judgment and political motivation. "How's your son or daughter doing? How are you doing? Is there anything I can do to be helpful?" Sometimes I feel hopeful, and that hopefulness comes when I witness thoughtful human interaction. My youngest son's girlfriend, Megan Cantley, teaches second grade in Charlotte, North Carolina. She decided to do something to be helpful to Mike. She discovered that the soldiers have to buy their own personal products, and sometimes the items are hard to come by, especially when they're in a remote outpost. Megan organized a drive to secure personal items such as beef jerky, soap, toothbrushes, razors, hand cream, lotions, deodorant, toothpaste, and other personal care items to send to Mike's unit. There are two women in Mike's unit, and products of interest to women are unavailable to female troops in remote outposts. And Megan made sure that these items were included in the shipment. Megan talked local businesses into donating the money to ship the items to Afghanistan. And her students adopted soldiers as pen pals and started writing letters. The students received training in writing skills, and the soldiers received cute letters from kids, and that brightened their day. One little boy wrote this to his soldier: "When you return, I will slut you." Megan couldn't understand what "I will slut you" meant. So she asked the little boy to read the sentence to her, and he proudly read, "When you return, I will salute you." She said, "Honey, it looks like you left out some important vowels." What is it that Megan did? She recognized that military people are human beings, and she tried to help by recognizing their worth and dignity. And by doing so, she really said, "Thank you." I was in an airport a few years ago, sitting in a waiting area. There was an announcement asking us to stand clear of the exit door because a group of Army soldiers returning from Iraq were about to walk through in order to pick up their personal gear. As they emerged from the hallway, everybody in the waiting area rose to their feet and started to applaud. Some people lined up and shook hands with the soldiers as they walked by. One man opened his wallet and tried to hand the soldiers $20 bills. And the soldiers laughed and they waved off the offer of money. And my eyes filled with tears. I was thinking about my students who come to me in the middle of a semester and ask for an incomplete in the class because they're going to be deployed to Iraq through the National Guard, and Mr. Beck, I don't know when I'm going to get back. I was emotional because I was thinking about my son and hoping that someday if he was walking through an airport in some city strange to him, somebody would have the decency to put politics aside and shake his hand and just say thank you. Email from Dad to Mike. I was asked by the Unitarian Universalist Church in Kent to give another sermon. I may need some input from you. You can read the sermon description below. Email from Mike to Dad. Well, Dad, I don't know if I can really help you with what it's like to be an Army dad. You'll have to answer that one on your own. As for the media, well, they're the media. They got to sell the time slot. And what sells are things that move the war along at a fast pace. Big explosions in a downtown marketplace with 100 burning bodies and mothers screaming in anguish for their children. Or fierce firefights between the bad guys and the U.S. Army, complete with helmet cocked to the side and a Camel cigarette dangling from his mouth as he puts another bullet into the enemy for the good old U.S. of A. What doesn't sell are the stories of relationships being built between the commanders on the ground and the local mayors, or the conversations between the storekeeper and the platoon leader as to how they can clean up the trash off the streets to make it a better place for their children to play. What people don't realize is that we spend more time shaking hands than shooting guns. A lot of the work that we do to defeat the insurgents is to help the people. We teach them how to organize and govern themselves. Personally, I'm trying to develop engineers so they can build infrastructures in the cities and towns to provide for security and basic necessities. That doesn't make for good TV. But I guess that's where you would come in. While other people's commitment to the war is as extensive as standing for most of the national anthem at a ball game, you have a much bigger stake invested. You will lose some or all. You've already lost time. You lost an entire year last year when I was deployed, and you're about to lose another. While my brothers Dave and Dan were going to family reunions and weddings with you, I was not there. That's time lost, and that's the least you stand to lose out of this deal. Losing everything? Well, that would be just that. Done. Finished. Not coming back. To everyone else, I'd be just another footnote in a decade-long war. Well, I'm really giving myself too much credit. I'd probably be a statistic added to a number that would be in the footnote. An ever-growing total that would creep closer and closer to the next sensational round number. So I guess what you have to live with, far in the back of your mind, is that you always have the chance of facing this reality. It's a hard thing to live with, and something that most fathers will never have to deal with. As for how to deal with it? Well, personally, I'd go for the sympathy vote. How about if we ask for $50 from everybody we know and we'll split it? Nothing else is really going on here lately. I had to spend the last few days poring over the data we collected on my helicopter flight. But I'm going to get out on the road tomorrow and do some project site visits. So that should break up the day a bit. Good luck with your sermon, Mike. Email from Dad to Mike. Mike, I think you just wrote my sermon for me. Email from Mike to Dad. Things are going pretty well here. They're working me like a borrowed mule, but that's okay because it makes the time go by fast. Thanks for sending the pictures of the new house you bought in Stowe. Looks pretty sweet. I can't wait to come home and take a nap on your couch. Email from Dad to Mike. Mike, today on the news, there were stories about bombings in Pakistan and attacks in Afghanistan. Mike, I'm afraid. I don't want anything bad to happen to you. I want you to quit the army and get a nice, safe desk job and live to be 100 and die in your bed surrounded by your great-grandchildren. I don't want the realities of war to change you from that funny little boy who told jokes all the time. I don't want you to be tied up in geopolitics that don't make any sense. I want you to come home, Mike. I want you to... I stared at the unfinished email. His words came back to me. It's not your place to approve or disapprove of my decision. It's your job to learn how to live with it. My hand moved across the keyboard and I hit delete. My thoughts go back. A few years after Mike had taken the oath of office, there was talk of war. I was at lunch with then Representative Sherrod Brown. The conversation was about the potential of Congress supporting the president's decision to send our fighting forces to attack Iraq. I passed a note to Sherrod. The note said, "My son is in the army. As you make the decision about going to war, please be careful with his life." I had deleted the first email telling Michael I wanted him to come home. New email to Mike from Dad. "I'm glad you like the pictures of the new house. I'll be moving to Stowe on November 4th. I can't believe what a lazy bum you are. You went all the way to Afghanistan to avoid helping me move. No matter. I'll get your brother Dan to do all the heavy lifting. Yes, indeed, when you come home, there will be a space on the couch for you to take a nap. Write again when you have time. Take good care of yourself. Please be safe." It's a sentence repeated by millions of Americans who have loved ones in the military. Take good care of yourself, and please be safe. It's a message that should be on the lips of every American. I finished typing the last line. "Take good care of yourself, and please be safe. Love, Dad." Send. Amen.
Will the ushers please come forward? When speaking of the armed forces, we often hear how those individuals are making a sacrifice for their country. I used to have a vague notion of how this sacrifice affected military families, with long separations, missed holidays, and the like. I now fully understand how great their sacrifice is. My son-in-law, Caleb, is currently serving in the Army and has been deployed in Cuba since mid-June. He has only been with his daughter for 2 weeks of her life. He has missed out on so much, but at the same time, he is providing for his family in a way that would have been impossible in a civilian job. Through his service, he has given his family an immeasurable gift. Your gifts to this church will now be gratefully received. And if you are with us for the first time, please take a candle from a basket as our gift to you.
As we extinguish the chalice today, before we do that, Danny, would you please stand up? He'll hate this. This is my youngest son, Dan. He's a guest with us today. So Dan, we'll all be going downstairs for coffee. Perhaps you could take a moment to greet Danny when we have a chance. As we extinguish the chalice today, I have this section from A Midshipman's Prayer. Keep me true to my best self, guarding me against dishonesty in purpose and in deed, and helping me so to live that I can stand unashamed and unafraid before my shipmates, my loved ones, and thee.